And some of my most treasured memories of my youth was my mom dropping me off at spring training practice, even before the games got started, giving me a quarter so I can call home and a sandwich bag. And I would stay there for hours, and I watched Dave Winfield in right field, and I watched the Yankees taking batting practice, and Ron Guidry and Goose Gossage. And for me, you know, it's kind of like being in baseball nirvana, just sitting there watching, walking around the little Yankee Stadium. And baseball was something that my parents and my grandmother shared with me. The reality is I never knew my grandfathers. One passed away when my dad was 10 years old, and my maternal grandfather just disappeared from the scene. But my grandmothers loved baseball, and they shared baseball with me. And so I would watch baseball games with them, and particularly after I graduated high school with my paternal grandmother, over-the-air broadcast of a Yankee game. It was every Tuesday night, and so we would share dinner and watch a game, and she would share her stories of Puerto Rico. And then after I graduated college, I lived for a year with my maternal grandmother, and she taught me a lot about how she thought about baseball, but how she rooted. I remember asking her one particular time, so which is your favorite team, the Yankees or the Mets? I'm a diehard Yankee fan. And she's like, I root for all New York teams, and I also root for whichever team has the most Latinos.
I also was curious, too, the career path you went on, maybe starting with baseball cards, how you looked at the back of them to see where some of the Latino players were from.
Baseball cards was my intro to Latinos in baseball. Seeing the players who came from Puerto Rico, from Panama, from Cuba, the Dominican Republic, as I flipped the cards over. But one of those cards that I always remember was John Candelaria. He was, in fact, a Puerto Rican from New York City. And I was like, wow, he's Puerto Rican like me. And that was a pretty fascinating part that, you know, it made me even more aware of baseball spread throughout the Caribbean world and Latin America, but also of the diaspora of Puerto Ricans from the island to U.S. communities. And that, you know, this is part of the story that my family had participated in, and many of these ballplayers participated in as well. And in fact, I played baseball in high school, I played in college, and it actually heightened my love of history. Getting to know the geography of baseball, getting to learn about, you know, when Latino players started participating. Another one of my fond memories of my youth is playing catch with one of my uncles, whose name was Jose Antonio Burgos. And he would drill me, quiz me, as we're throwing the ball back and forth about who was the first Latino player on the Yankees, who was the first Latino player on this team and that team. And so that is one of the ways I remember about kind of the connections between baseball, history, geography. The other part of why I mentioned my uncle's name in full was I remember when I finished my first book manuscript, which is entitled Playing America's Game, I went to visit my parents in Georgia, and my uncle, who at that point I had not seen in about 6-7 years, drove up from Sarasota, Florida to celebrate this moment. I, being a professor, was very proud of finishing my first book, or I asked him, by the way, did you know that there was a player in the Negro Leagues with the name Jose Antonio Burgos, and he was from Ponce, Puerto Rico? And he's like, yes, your grandmother named me after him. I had no idea. I was floored how personal the story of Latinos in baseball actually ran through the family. My paternal grandmother, his mom, had passed away when I was just getting to my junior year in college. And so to learn that 10, 15 years later was kind of blowing my mind that these connections were always there.
Do you feel like you wrote your book because there's somewhat of a misconception out there, breaking the color line, but you're thinking always African-American players, not Latino players?
As I argue in the book, what we see with the story of African-Americans and the color line in baseball is the story of outright exclusion. If you're black, you're out. To understand the intricacies of how the color line worked and how the line actually moved, you study Latinos, because you go from a moment in the 19-teens where very light-skinned and actually well-off Cubans like Armando Marsans and Rafael Almeida are making it into the major leagues based on their talent, but also because they're deemed not black. And so they were presented to the public as white Cubans. In the 30s and in the 40s, particularly during World War II, you had what were medium-colored, coffee-colored, café con leche is how we say it in Spanish, ball players who in the Caribbean, in Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, people knew that they had African ancestry. But they were presented to the American public as not black. And that's what all of that really mattered, was that Clark Griffith, owner of the Washington Senators, vouched for Roberto Estalella, who they were calling in many instances Bobby, that he is not black. He is Cuban. And because the major league team owner says it, then he gets in. And that is how the color line worked. It was about not just self-identification. In fact, in many ways, self-identification mattered the least. It's how those in power and authority defined the identity, the racial identity of these players, whether they got in or not.
How nice was it with Jose Abreu for him to have a chance to talk about his heritage instead of last night's game-winning homer or the starting pitcher, something that he's not used to doing every day?
One of the things, in addition to talking with Abreu with other Latino players, was that I was able to interview them in their native tongue. So they were speaking in Spanish, feeling very comfortable, and sharing. We asked the White Sox, when we asked permissions to tape the interview with Abreu, and they asked how long, and we said, well, it'll be 3 or 4 questions. And Abreu kind of prolonged it. You know, he wanted to share his story because he was able to talk in Spanish, and it was about growing up in Cuba playing baseball. It's about his mother and how important she was in inspiring him to pursue his Major League Baseball dream. It was about Minnie Minoso, about when Jose signed with the White Sox, that Minnie played such an important role in helping him get accustomed to life in the United States, to know that it's possible. In talking with Jose and then in other instances with Alexei Ramirez and others, that Minoso remains this very huge figure in Cuba in terms of he's a star. He is a Hall of Famer to them. And he's also a pioneer. And they don't lose sight of that.
And what does it mean now for your work and your research to be exposed to a new audience?
It's a fantastic opportunity for broadening out what the impact of the research can be and using different mediums. Television is so different than the written word. People have to seek out your written word, and it's there. Television is fleeting if it's not archived, but it's such a vast audience. And what's the great opportunity here with the Big Ten Network is with the expansion from the Mid-Atlantic to the Northeast all the way out to Nebraska, people can hear and learn about the story of Latinos in baseball and that history. And what I was reminded of this past weekend, and I think most observers of baseball and Latinos in baseball were reminded of, there was a sports writer for the Houston Chronicle who had interviewed Carlos Gomez and was using the accented version of English in his writing about Gomez. And there is still a great need for people to become educated about the story of Latinos in baseball. They are constantly being represented or re-presented as recent arrivals when their history and their legacy in the game is well over 100 years old.